Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we're going to be discussing in this episode were originally released on October 24th, 2007. And I had 35 comics and previews.
I had 37 comics, two hardcovers. I got the Marvel Masterworks, Nick Fury, and Serenity hardcover. Interesting thing about the Serenity hardcover, which was surprising and somewhat disappointing, was when that Serenity series came out, there were 9 different covers, one for each member of the crew. For each of the chapters in this hardcover, I was suspecting that they would print all the covers, but they printed only 8 of them. So for the first chapter, they did the Mal and Inara covers. For the second chapter, they did Jane and Kaylee. For the third chapter, they did Zoe and Wash. And then near the back, they kind of just did the art. They didn't really print them as separate covers, but they did the River and Simon images that they kind of munged together so you at least get to see the art. But the Shepherd book cover is not in here at all.
That's interesting.
And I was very surprised at that. So just an aside for, you know, the brown coats out there. And then I got 2 trade paperbacks, Conan, Volume 13, that's one volume away from finishing Roy Thomas's run on that series, and Jack of Fables, Volume 2. I got one book, which is Spider-Man, The Icon. I got this autographed by Stan Lee edition of that. And then I got 2 of those classic Marvel lead figures, Black Cat and Hawkeye.
Cool. At some point, you should take some photos of those Marvel figures.
Yeah.
We'll put them up on the website.
I got to take some new photos because I'm redoing my art on the wall, so I'll do that.
Cool. Sounds good. We're going to start with Gotham Underground from DC. This is the first of a 9-issue miniseries, and I had kind of mixed feelings on this, and there were 2 things that kind of bothered me about it. Overall, I thought it was good, not necessarily great, but so much of this story hinges on how various villains have been picked up, you know, all across the DC universe and have essentially gone missing. And really, aside from here, Outsiders 50 and the most recent issue of Checkmate, we've been told more about this happening than we've ever seen this happen. So I'm a little disappointed with that. And then the cliffhanger at the end of this just did not work for me at all. But overall, I thought this was okay. I think it's playing into the big picture. Certainly, if it doesn't tie into Salvation Run, I'll be shocked. And if you like the Batman villains and stuff, I recommend it. But overall, this was just kind of an average comic, I think, for me. What was your opinion of it, Bob?
I liked it well enough that, you know, this was one of my first issue challenge books where I bought the first issue and didn't order any subsequent ones. So I liked it well enough that I'm going to get the rest of the series. It hooked me enough that's the case. Now, it is definitely going to tie into Salvation Run because they actually even make a reference to some place called Salvation as the jail that they're sending the bad guys to. So I'm suspecting that just since they're saying that, it's going to hook in. I won't say definitely because I am not a mind reader, can't predict DC, but it seems like they're very strongly setting this up to be a tie-in.
Yeah, I can't see how it wouldn't tie in, is what it comes down to.
I was not too keen on Tobias Whale. He's from the 100, right, from back in the old Black Lightning series way back when.
I've got that whole run in my back issue boxes waiting to be read, and I've read bits and pieces. I thought he was a bad choice.
I don't recall seeing this guy since that Black Lightning series. That was like 25 years ago or something, so having him jump out of the bushes as the big bad guy here is, I don't know.
I think he was used in one of the later Black Lightning titles, and I think he also might have been used in the Rose Thorn stuff at some point, but even this is going back 15, 20 years in some of it. So yeah, he seemed to be out of the blue. The problem I have with it is visually too similar to Kingpin.
Yeah.
It just seems derivative.
Well, in the original stuff, he was much whiter. Here they kind of have him as pale, but there he was like, you know, totally white, you know, kind of like the white whale, ha ha ha, you know, that was the kind of riff they were doing with there. But one thing about the art in this issue, I'm a little, Joey Calafiore and Jack Purcell, it's a little, I'm struggling for the right word here, it, a little loose, let's say, especially some of the faces.
Particularly in the scene where we get Tobias Whale, most of the guys in the background, shadows over the eyes, so they don't have to draw the eyes. And there are a couple other places where I felt shortcuts were sort of being used in a few places. There are other places, like some of the stuff with the Riddler, where I thought the art was good. Nowhere would I say it's just unbelievably excellent, but it did seem a little uneven in a couple of places.
It's an example in the second to the last page, which is kind of like that two-page spread with the Suicide Squad guys rushing in.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Captain Boomerang's face there.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it. It's not a matter of rendering, but, you know, there's a sparsity of lines in that face. But, you know, if you look at a Kevin Maguire drawing of a face, there is certainly a sparsity of lines in that also. But, I mean, two ends of the spectrum on the reality of the face that's being conveyed.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone's a Kevin Maguire. I mean, Kevin Maguire is a master of doing that kind of stuff. So it's sort of an unfair comparison. But, you know, on these, it just felt there was something missing in the artwork.
Well, it's not the number of lines they put down on the paper. It's how well they use them.
Exactly. And that's why I made the comparison to Kevin Maguire, because, you know, he is not into over-rendering, but, you know, what he does do is done in just that way.
Now, on this same page, I've got a quick question. The guy behind Boomerang is, of course, Bane. Bane is a really huge guy. About how huge would you say he is?
From the perspective in this issue, he's pretty huge. I mean, he's drawn where his torso is like four times as wide as Plastique's torso. That just seems off.
Well, they're coming through double doors. He seems to had to duck to get in there and is pretty much filling the doorway. Now, the reason I mention this is I want to establish that this guy is not just big, but huge. The problem I have is if you go to the last page, and I don't want to give this away, but
just compared to Matches Malone, now his torso is only slightly wider than Matches Malone's torso.
Well, it wasn't so much a comparison to Matches Malone, it's the fact that he was able to sneak up on Matches Malone and, you know, knock him out. It's like, I'm sorry, this is a guy that's hard to miss. This is not a stealth kind of a guy. Bane is somebody you not only see coming, you feel the floor rumbling as he comes.
Yeah, well, I would agree that, well, I think a big guy can move silently, but given who Matches Malone really is, you're not going to sneak up on him.
Yeah.
Unless that's not, maybe that's what the riff is there, is that's not, you know, who Matches Malone is in this particular instance.
It'll be interesting to see where they go, because they've done some stuff with Bane in the past, and I don't know how much of that is still kind of considered in continuity or how much the writers are even aware of. But, I mean, this is one of the few times we've seen the Suicide Squad actually coming in and doing stuff like this.
Right. I think they're starting to use them more for things like that. You're seeing them pop up in various places.
Have they really popped up anywhere besides, like, here in Outsiders?
I could have sworn I saw them in Checkmate at some point.
Well, there was the last issue of Checkmate where we see people getting sent off to Salvation. But in Countdown, we're told this is happening. But I don't recall really seeing it anywhere else. And maybe I'm just forgetting some stuff. This is the kind of thing where they're trying to do this big arc across the whole universe of titles, and just tossing in a couple of scenes here and there to establish this kind of stuff would go a long ways for me.
I'm feeling that they're doing an okay job of that, because I'm not remembering all the precise specific instances, but I think they've done enough of it that I'm kind of getting the feeling that it's, you know, spanning the universe.
I just think it didn't feel as ubiquitous as they were trying to make it seem in this case. They're doing some good stuff, and I do like how they're trying to tell a big cohesive story. It's just when a few of the cracks start showing, as is going to be the case with anything that big, it just sometimes gets a little noticeable. But overall, they are doing a good job. Shall we move?
So on to She-Hulk?
Yeah, I was going to say, on to She-Hulk. I kind of want to start our discussion on this with a quote from the letters page, if that's okay.
Okay.
And the letters page, I thought, was very well used. it was essentially a letter by Peter David talking about him coming onto the book, and particularly the history of the character, how she's had some very definitive runs, and how he was coming on after a really solid run by Dan Slott. And he said, "If I tried to write stories in the same vein, I would fail spectacularly. Best case scenario, they'd read like watered-down Dan Slott stories. Come to think of it, that's the worst case scenario as well." And that really sums up a lot, because I really enjoyed the Dan Slott run. I really enjoy Peter David as a writer. But as good as this issue was, and I thought it was very good, I was left with a kind of a what the heck's going on feeling out of it, because it was such a departure from the previous issue. I almost felt like, you know, it's like I know I didn't miss an issue, but I feel almost like I did. And I don't fault Peter David at all for his creative decision to take the book in a new direction and do kind of a clean break. Because I think he is right. If he had tried to follow right on the heels, keep her in the law firm, do all that kind of stuff, it would have been a direct comparison to Dan Slott, and really wouldn't have served either writer. So, as a first issue, which even though this is issue 22, for all intents and purposes, it is a first issue. It hooked me, I was interested, I was sufficiently puzzled by a few things that I was a bit frustrated when the issue ended, because there were a few things where it was clear that I had been intentionally misled by the storyteller to build up to a couple of reveals and a shock ending. So, if you like She-Hulk, I recommend it. If you're looking for more of the Dan Slott She-Hulk, you're not going to find that here. If you're a fan of Peter David, I definitely recommend it. What did you think, Bob?
I liked it. I applaud the fact that this is not a number one. All the arguments that were used as the absolute reason why Captain America had to restart at yet another number one when Ed Brubaker came along, because it was such a departure and so different. All those things are exactly the same true here, but they didn't feel compelled to make a new number one with this.
Yeah, and this, like you said, deserved it.
I like the fact that they didn't do that. It's classic Peter David writing. He did a really good job on the issue. I liked it, and I liked it on the standpoint that he took it in a completely unexpected direction that I was not, obviously, unexpected direction that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
The definition of unexpected, I guess, can be Mr. Redundancy. And I liked some of the just little moments he had in, like with this highlight guy at the beginning, and, you know, where is that going to go and how's he going to come back into the story? And the artwork, it had kind of a almost Gary Frank kind of quality to it, the way he's doing the faces.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I liked it. It's a clean art style. Just the storytelling, there was, again, you know, enough interesting elements that it's like, oh, wait, that's interesting. You know, why are these two characters here, you know, and how is that going to play out and all this? So I give it an unreserved thumbs up. I liked the way that he started it. And again, I like the fact that he did a clean break from Dan Slott. He's trying to set his own direction with this. And again, I applaud Marvel for not jumping on the relaunch number one bandwagon and just having this be number 22. But it's a great issue to jump on. If there's someone who has liked things that Peter David has done in the past and they have not been getting She-Hulk, this is a perfect issue to jump on with, because it's everything that someone who'll like Peter David will like about Peter David, and it doesn't have any particular She-Hulk baggage.
Yeah, yeah, excellent jumping on point. I totally agree with that. Like you said, the art is just a really clean style, and there are a couple of places where it is just so well done. This is a really good creative team, and I'm looking forward to them doing a nice long and solid run on this title.
So, speaking of clean art, our next book, Velocity Pilot Season Number 1 from Top Cow, this is an interesting one, because this totally did not hit my radar screen. And when you said, hey, let's do Velocity Pilot Season Number 1, I like had a vague remembrance of seeing a solicit and previews. I had not ordered the book, and I'm like, oh, okay, what the hell? I'm an easy touch to buy an extra comic book. So I went to the comic shop. I picked up the number one. I didn't even read it that carefully, because the creative team is written right there on the cover above the thing. the cover. I don't know if somebody else did the cover, but, you know, so I'm reading it, and I start reading the book, and I get to about page 3, and I'm like, hey, this is Kevin Maguire. It's like, just like I was talking about Kevin Maguire, you know, with the facial comparisons to what Gotham Underground is not. You know, this is like, I got to about page 3, and I'm looking at faces, and I'm like, hey, that's a Kevin Maguire face that I'm looking at there. And then I flip, oh, this is Kevin Maguire. So the whole thing, you know, the story's a pretty decent story by Joe Casey.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the art tremendously. And, you know, anybody who loves Kevin Maguire, this is something you should definitely pick up because it's classic Kevin Maguire art. Somewhat different, you know, like if you look at the inside back cover, that's kind of the classic, you know, Velocity thing. I kind of liked this one almost because of the Kevin Maguire art.
Yeah, it's a question of whichever two titles get picked up out of this pilot season, presumably they're going to have the same creative team that the pilot season issue did. If not, I mean, I liked this, again, because certainly the character's fun. This is one of the few Cyberforce characters that I even really remembered. But, I mean, Kevin Maguire, I would love to see him doing an ongoing book. He is such a good artist. And this is a fun book. There's aspects of the writing that were really good. There are a couple of things with, like, the page layout and stuff that I thought were really nice touches that, you know, it's definite departure from kind of a standard Image book in many respects.
Right. I find it interesting that you look at it and it's like, hey, go behind the scenes and vote at myspace.com/pilot season. So I go to pilot season. I go to myspace.com/pilot season, and it's the official pilot season page is coming soon.
Oh, wow.
It's like, what? You know, it's like, come on, guys. You know, it's like, get the, you know, it's like, here you will be able to get all of the information on Top Cow's pilot season promotion. Stay tuned for the complete page to go live very soon. And several of these issues have been on the stands. It's like, come on, you know, don't be idiots here, you know?
Maybe they're waiting for that last one.
Yeah, maybe they want you to read all 4 of them or whatever, but yeah.
This is the only pilot season one I'd picked up, and I did it on the strength of the character. I had not realized Kevin Maguire was drawing it. And, I mean, we were talking about this when we were picking it, of kind of which team was she on and who else was on the team, and both of us had a hard time remembering any of really the other Cyberforce characters other than, like, Ripclaw. These characters have been very much out of play for a while. And the sales on, I guess it was the Ripclaw one, were not exactly stellar. They were in, I'm thinking, the 8,000 range. So I'm curious which titles are going to come out of this and how they do. And I thought going for a very explicit, hey, we're going to do a one-shot and let you guys decide, was a very interesting move for Top Cow to make, and I hope it pays off for them.
Anyway, I give this one a thumbs up. You know, if somebody wants to pop out and pick this up off the rack while it's still out there, especially if you like Kevin Maguire art. You know, he did the Defenders run recently, the classic Justice League International stuff, which I always liked. I mean, I say things against the Bwahaha League, but I enjoy those stories as stories. They're just not the Justice League.
Exactly, exactly.
In my opinion. You know, it's like, they're great stories. They're great stories, great art. It's just not the Justice League. At least they're not my Justice League. Whereas I understand lots of people who grew up in the 90s, that is their Justice League. You know, so it's just a perspective sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mention a couple of other extra things here. The Dominatrix book from IDW.
Mm-hmm.
They lost it in issue number 3. You know, they had resisted. You know, I was reading the first 2 issues. It was action. Okay, so her job is that she's a dominatrix, but she gets this pill and she's able to do all these kind of things. But, you know, and then a lot of people on the forum were like, I can't buy that book because, you know, I can't have it sitting around. My wife will see it and, you know, what's she going to think and, you know, all this. And it's like, well, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, she's a dominatrix, but it's not like she's out, like, plying her trade and, you know, being really ridiculous. But, you know, her top comes off in this issue and she's running around topless for a period of time. So they just, you know, they couldn't hold on to the taking the low road this issue. So I was a little disappointed with that. I'm not someone who's opposed to looking at a topless woman, but it didn't seem like it was necessary.
Well, and it wasn't that she was topless. It's the way it came about and just how gratuitous it was.
It was absolutely gratuitous. And then when she wakes up in bed and they're trying to just like, this is the exact scene that you've seen 1,000 other times where they've got the sheet strategically placed. And here it's like, okay, well, we're not going to do that. And let's just show her naked. And it's just, it came off as tremendously gratuitous.
Yeah. This is one that has the potential of being just a really kind of different, I don't want to say superhero book, because it's not really a superhero book, but a book about somebody with superpowers. And there are a couple of places where the writing, some of the scene transitions, is almost painful. It's good, but I think once this creative team gets a little bit more experience, gets a little bit more used to doing some storytelling stuff and improves just a little bit, this could be a really fun book for the long term. But right now, it's okay.
I like the personal moments where Dominique's talking to her friends.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, you're kind of getting like that, you know, behind the scenes look on, okay, well, she does, you know, what she does as a living, but she's like a normal person too. And she has sort of normal conversations and they go out to like the, you know, local Starbucks equivalent and they're having coffees and, you know, things like this. It's like, I like that. But I just think that they can tease without going full-on gratuitous nudity in the book.
Right? Yeah.
Because then you're just taking a whole different turn with it. You know, it's kind of like the difference between drawing a blank on like something that's, you know, like on one end of the spectrum, you got like Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, where, you know, Jim Ballant just uses that as like a, you know, wild excuse to do softcore porn drawings of naked women, like all issue, every issue. You know, it's like, and I don't want to see this turn into that, you know, versus something that's just teasy, you know, where you have kind of well-built women and they're cute and they've got little costumes. Like, let's say you like Witchblade, right? I mean, Witchblade, you know, that costume she wears, not much of a reason for that costume to exist except for it to be, you know, really kind of like a tease and, you know, be like a scanty kind of bikini type of outfit. But they kind of go up to the line, but they don't cross it, right?
Did you ever read Sex and Violence?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Same kind of thing. Perez, in that book, he went right up to the line, but he didn't cross it.
Yeah.
And it was very sexy and very teasy, but he didn't go. He did maybe a couple of times in a panel or two very tastefully.
Yeah, yeah. And this has the potential of having that kind of walk the line, certainly have it set in that kind of, you know, high sex background or whatever, but not blatant about it. And it's an interesting series, but, and certainly, you know, if it sounds like something you'd be interested in, certainly go check it out. I'm not trying to recommend against it by any stretch of the imagination. I just want to see it kind of move up to that next level, show a little bit more class, tighten up the writing a little bit. And I think if they do that, this could just be a really interesting, excellent kind of departure from the norm book. It's got a lot of potential, some of which, like you're saying, with the scenes with her and her friends at the coffee shops, those are the ones where I think it's really doing some great stuff, some very interesting stuff. But then there are a few other things, like the whole bit, the scene she was topless on, the whole, not just the topless aspect, but the whole scene, just kind of, it's like, where did this come from and why do I even care? It felt non sequitur-ish, even though it was an integral part of the story. And I felt about halfway through the second issue that it kind of did that sort of left turn into, you know, not even a new direction, but I don't know. There's something about the writing that isn't totally working for me, and I really can't put my fingers on exactly what aspect of the writing that is. Definitely worth checking out. You know, I want to see where that goes and what direction they take it in.
One other book I just wanted to call attention to that I got this week was another one of my first issue challenges that I will be continuing with. It's called Proof, P-R-O-O-F, from Image Comics. It's really kind of interesting. It's there are some FBI agents that are going to be looking into kind of cryptozoology type of cases. One of the agents is a Sasquatch. His name is John Prufrock, and he is, you know, his nickname is Proof, short for Prufrock, but he's, you know, they're looking for proof on, you know, Chupacabra, you know, and then future episodes may have like things like the Loch Ness Monster or Mothman or things like that, you know, Jersey Devil, things like that. But, you know, it's like they have this reserve and they take this other FBI agent, Ginger Brown, and she's meeting her new partner. Before they go in, they say, ah, you know, I kind of need your gun and I need your bullets. You know, like she gets in there and there's, you know, her new partner. They didn't tell her, you know, her new partner's, you know, big Sasquatch looking guy. She comes in and like immediately she pulls her gun and is like, ah, there's a Bigfoot there. It's like, well, that's why we take your bullets away before you come in.
Yeah.
It was funny. I liked it. It was a good read. So, you know, something to kind of flip through. Somebody's in a comic shop and they see this on the rack. If you like such things, it was kind of an interesting take. Kind of like, you know, if you like X-Files, for instance, you know, to some extent, Hellboy, although this is way less dark than Hellboy, almost like a Buffy. You know, you like Buffy, John.
Right. I was going to say, do you think this is something I would like? Because it's not something I've done.
I would say you're going to go to Austin Comics today.
Austin Books, yeah.
Austin Books, I'm sure they're going to have a copy of this on the rack. Pick it up and flip. It's certainly got the potential of something that you would like.
Okay.
Because, you know, X-Files, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's got that supernatural piece, but it's also got kind of a humorous edge to it also.
Cool. One thing I want to mention that you had turned me on to was Neozoic number 1 by Red 5 Comics. This is one that really didn't even hit my radar in the previews, but based on your recommendation, Bob, I read it. I loved it. This is something that has a really cool kind of an art style to it. Clean in places, yet I don't want to say manga influence because it's not, but it's with the coloring and all that, it's got a very unique flavor to the art, and I'm really enjoying the story. The premise is, you know, almost ridiculously simple. It's kind of what if dinosaurs didn't get knocked out and humans and dinosaurs coexist. And this, to me, is one of the best examples of what an independent comic can be and should be. It should be something that, almost by its very nature, sort of can't or shouldn't take place in a mainstream DC Marvel universe or that sort of a thing. And it's something that has, just by nature of it, its own unique identity. It's not like there are a few dozen other, you know, humans and dinosaurs walking around kind of books. And, I mean, I can't think of another book even sort of similar to this other than
Mark Schultz's Xenozoic Tales, maybe. Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, it became.
Yeah, I was going to go with Primordials from Techno Comics. Had some rough similarities, but even that was totally different. But yeah, I mean, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs is a good one, too. This is just fun. I recommend it. I've enjoyed, so far, everything I've read from Red 5 Comics, which is Neozoic, Abyss, and Atomic Robo. All of them have been fun books, good books, and this company is off to a strong start. It's one that I'm definitely going to be paying a lot more attention to their solicits and previews, and anything that's kind of a on-the-fence thing, just the fact it's coming out from Red 5 is going to be enough to push it into the okay, I'll get it column.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, if you look in the November previews at page 310 from Red 5 Comics, they've got a new series, Afterburn number 1, which again, just like John said, based on the strength of everything that they've done so far, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to order Afterburn number 1. Plus, it's got a special discount from DCBS. So, Afterburn number 1. A year ago, a massive solar flare destroyed the Earth's eastern hemisphere with the power of 1,000 nuclear bombs. But amid chaos, there's profit. That's where Jake comes in, retrieving valuable items from the remains when he can outwit the competition and the mutated locals. And the cover image looks nice, and normally, I would probably just skate right by a solicit like this because there's not that much info. But the fact that I have really loved everything that Red 5 has done so far has led me to believe that the guys who are in charge of greenlighting things at Red 5 are on the same wavelength as me. And I'm probably going to like something that they put out. So I'm definitely going to be giving this a try.
Yeah, same here. Same here.
Do you want to mention the things that are getting the extra bump from DCBS this month, John?
Yeah, we've got a new feature that we're experimenting with, and it's a listener participation feature called the Preview Spotlight. And what we want is everybody to kind of send in MP3s of just, you know, as you're going through previews, if there's something that you really want to highlight and make people aware of, send a short 2 or 3 minute thing in and let us know about it. I'll compile those together into an episode. And as part of that, Cameron over at DCBS was kind enough to let Bob and I pick out two or three things that we wanted to kind of give an extra push to. Afterburn was one of them. PvP from Image was another one.
Brit number 6 is the third.
We picked those because both of us are liking Brit. It's a great series. It's a Kirkman thing. It's one that I think if you try it out, you will probably like it, particularly if you like anything else Robert Kirkman's doing. He's not actually writing this. He is overseeing it, and the first two issues have totally been in his style and tone and feel. And then we picked PvP because every one of those issues is a great jumping on point. It's a nice, fun comic, and it's a humor comic. There's not enough of those.
Right. So, you know, 50% off on Brit number 6, 50% off on PvP number 40, and 45% off on this Red 5 comic, Afterburn number 1. And give them a try. It's kind of like a good jumping on point for the first two, and it's a first issue for Afterburn. I would also strongly recommend that if you're at a local comic shop and you see any of the existing things out there, whether it be Atomic Robo, Abyss, or Neozoic, you know, pick them up and give them a read because, boy, I've loved every single one of these things.
Yeah, yeah. The deadline for sending in submissions for the first previews spotlight is November 10th, end of day, and really it comes down to you've got until whenever I start compiling the episode, which should be that Sunday the 11th. The other thing we're doing for that is if you send in a submission, you get, if it's for a mainstream kind of DC Marvel, are you including Dark Horse and Image in this? Okay.
Yeah, I included Dark Horse, Image, DC, and Marvel.
So anything in kind of that front half of previews, you're going to get kind of one virtual ticket for every submission and every item you do a sales pitch on. If you do something from the back half or an indie one, you get two virtual tickets. Bob's going to take these virtual tickets, toss them into a virtual hat, pick one out, and we're going to give a copy of the awesome indie anthology by Indie Spinner Rack to that person.
That's correct. Promote comics that you like and have a chance of winning Indie Spinner Rack anthology. It's, I think, the cover price on it's something like $15, so it's a decent prize.
The goal for the preview spotlight is, like I said, listener participation. I want this to have as many voices as possible, covering as wide a range of items as possible. So if you've got stuff that you're reading that you think other people aren't and should be for whatever reason, put together an MP3, which is really easy to do. Download a copy of Audacity if you need to. I'm pretty sure Macintoshes have built-in software for recording MP3s fairly easily. And give the title, give the issue number, give the price, give the publisher. If you've got the page number in previews, that would be great too. But then do like just a minute or two marketing and selling that comic. Get us excited about it. Tell us why we should check it out. And hopefully, you know, everyone benefits from this because we'll find out about comics that we may have missed and sales go up and everybody's reading more great comics and it's a wonderful world. Hopefully it'll all come together and it'll be a lot of fun. It'll make for a good episode and really kind of highlight a lot of things that people may miss in the 500-plus page catalog of previews every month.
Came in at 512, I think, this month.
Well, plus the 112 for the Marvel previews.
Yeah, that's true.
And creators, if they want to do a sales pitch for their own stuff, they are welcome to do so also. Just give us a reason to buy this stuff.
But just keep it to a minute or two.
Yeah. Keep it short, keep it focused. Think of it like a radio commercial. You want to get in, give the sales pitch, get out. I was on Comic Timing episode 49 with Ian Levenstein and Brent Cassina, and we discussed the Superman Doomsday DVD and what we thought of it.
Join us next week when we discuss Countdown Presents Lord Havoc and the Extremists number 1 from DC, Annihilation Conquest Quasar number 4 from Marvel, and Dynamo 5 number 8 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.